The next case is 96-686, State of Ohio versus Mark Lovejoy. Ms. Anderson.
Which they had not agreed to put question of elements that are left. Our position is that when what you start with is a simultaneous prosecution, you simply can't apply the doctrine of collateral estoppel because they've already reached inconsistent results and therefore it's inapplicable.
So your argument is no matter what factual issues they might have reached to decide these other three, you got another crack at it on felony because it doesn't matter. Is that right?
If there is a truly inconsistent result, whereas they acquit on something, and if they truly found lack of purpose, they would have acquitted on others, yes, our position is that the doctrine of collateral estoppel should never apply in those circumstances because, number one, the purpose behind the doctrine of simultaneous prosecution is absent. And number two, the premise on which the doctrine is based, that the jury reacted rationally, is also absent. Because if they had truly acted rationally, they would have acquitted him also on the counts on which they hung. Our position is that the doctrine of collateral estoppel, as it is normally understood, simply cannot and should not be applied to a multiple prosecution, or rather when counts are brought at the same time. But the collateral, the United States Supreme Court has never applied it under these circumstances, never. And even the courts which have applied it under these circumstances, I know of only three that have ever said that a further prosecution would be prohibited, because some of those courts actually say that if they had acted rationally, they would have convicted him of the other counts on which they were able to agree. Since they didn't act rationally, therefore the defendant cannot prove that they necessarily decided an element. When you apply collateral estoppel, the burden is on the defendant to prove that they necessarily decided an element, not on us to prove the contrary. I believe that the courts that have gotten tied up with the inconsistent verdicts have elevated a consequence of the doctrine over the purpose of the doctrine. A consequence of the doctrine is prohibiting, or not prohibiting, but preventing inconsistent verdicts. But the purpose of the doctrine is not to prevent inconsistent verdicts, it's to prevent government overreaching. Again, a state suggested it is like the exclusionary rule. A consequence of the doctrine is protecting defendants in the exclusionary rule. But the purpose of the exclusionary rule is controlling the conduct of the police. And when the purpose is not served, the exclusionary rule does not apply, even though the consequence of protecting defendants also has been not brought about. The inclination I believe of a lot of people is to say that an acquittal is an acquittal and the reasons for it don't matter. However, when dealing with the doctrine of the collateral estoppel, the United States Supreme Court has said that all acquittals are not created equal and that the reasons for it do matter and that you look at everything in the transcript and the record to decide whether the jury must necessarily have decided certain issues. And if the defendant cannot prove they must necessarily have decided a particular issue, if, for example, there's anything in the transcript to indicate that the jury got confused in some way or lost its way, then the defendant has failed to establish collateral estoppel. And that is not a problem because in a case like this where we started everything with simultaneous prosecution, there's been no government overreaching.
But why do we complicate all this double jeopardy business with collateral estoppel and all the other things we do? When we learned about the Fifth Amendment twice being tried for the same cause, the prosecution or the police arrested you, the prosecution indicted you for crime X, you went to trial, if you're acquitted of crime X, the government's done. If you're convicted of crime X, then, of course, it proceeds to the appellate level. But now it seems, and we're seeing several of these kinds of cases, you go to trial, You get your conviction on part, you don't get it on the other part, you come back and say, let's get them again. Where does it end? Isn't that what double jeopardy is all about?
Well, according to the United States Supreme Court, when you get a jury unable to agree, it's manifest necessity for a mistrial. Initially, in one of the cases that I cited, they talk about the beginning of double jeopardy, and they say that at first, the defendant couldn't appeal anything.
I concede the mistrial issue. But the problem is we're getting involved in the elements of a crime that, in fact, may have been decided by the jury in the first verdict.
May have been. That's the key. If you apply collateral estoppel according to the United States Supreme Court, the burden is on the defendant to prove that it must have been.
So we switch that burden to the defendant in the middle of the case where we have all learned from day one that the defendant doesn't have to prove anything.
Well, the burden is switched to the defendant at the end of the case because it's at the end of the case that he puts the motion not to go forward.
Would you be willing to settle that if you charged somebody with crime X, tried that case, acquitted, it's over?
Yes, absolutely.
Would you be willing to settle that if, obviously you would, if you charge him with crime X, try him and convict him, it's over except for their appeal?
Sure.
Would you be willing to accept that if there is a charge with crime X and a mistrial brought about by other than the prosecution, the double jeopardy doesn't attach?
Does or does not?
Does not.
Does not.
Does not.
Yes, right, there's manifest necessity.
And haven't we said that?
Yes.
You said that in, I think, the Calhoun case.
I never.
Okay, so why are we here? The jury went through this whole thing step by step, found part of you convicted, and the thing you're really here is on the mistrial. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, on which charge?
Aggravated murder in the course of robbery.
Okay. Now, what was he convicted of?
He was not convicted of it. Oh, second time around, I'm sorry. Aggravated murder in the course of aggravated robbery and kidnapping.
Go ahead. What's wrong with that verdict case?
Isn't the jury saying that you had insufficient evidence to prove the other elements of that crime?
Our position, Your Honor, is that that's the problem. You can't tell what the jury is saying, because if what the jury was saying is that there was insufficient evidence to prove either purpose or identity, they would have acquitted him of the other count also.
But what you do know is that they didn't resolve those against the defendant. That, in other words, intent to kill and identity. The jury, one or the other of those, it's almost like a two-issue rule, one or the other of those was not proved to them sufficiently to convict.
I do not know that, Your Honor.
But how can you avoid that half of it?
I'm sorry?
How can you avoid that reasoning? You know, that's there.
Because they could have become confused.
I know, and you
about what they were supposed to be doing.
Right. Could have become confusing. That's what I was wondering. In order for us to reverse this case, we have to buy that. We have to determine that the jury was confused. You know, and that's the basis of it. We have to do that rather than take it at the first stop, where we know that they either didn't find an intent to kill or they thought this was the wrong guy. In acquitting of murder.
Actually, that's not the only way you could reverse the case. You could reverse the case by saying that the doctrine of collateral estoppel just simply doesn't apply when the state starts out with a simultaneous prosecution, regardless of the result.
No court said that yet, Kevin, Ms. Anderson.
Well, yes, I believe they have. The United States Supreme Court said that in a footnote of Grand Jury. It has said that it does not apply when there is a simultaneous prosecution. And the United States Supreme Court has said in every single case, on and on, that the purpose of it is to prevent government over I'd like to reserve the rest for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Mr. Belli.
May it please the Court, Ms. Anderson. In 13 years of criminal defense practice, this is the first time I represented an appellee in a criminal matter. I just resist the temptation to say that the sentence is wrong. So I'll say at this point that the Court of Appeals did have it exactly right, as did this Court in the case of State versus Liberatore. Liberatore pretty much decided the issues in this case. Liberatore was a decision released in 1983, and the principle of the case is very simple. If the prosecution in a multiple count case at trial fails to prove part of the whole, the prosecution then does not have a second opportunity to attempt to prove the whole. And boiling it down to the facts of Liberatore, Mr. Liberatore was prosecuted for aggravated murder, that is, an intentional killing in the course of an aggravated arson. He was also charged with the predicate crime of aggravated arson. The jury in his case acquitted him of aggravated arson, and this Court said that represents a finding that the elements of aggravated arson weren't proven.
Does a Court of Appeals opinion leave him convicted of anything?
In Mr. Lovejoy's case?
In this case, yes.
Yes, absolutely. He has been convicted of aggravated robbery and kidnapping, along with the gun specification that requires him to serve a sentence of 13 to 25 years, regardless of what occurs here. Also, he did receive a 1.5-year flat time sentence on a weapon under disability conviction, which the Court of Appeals remanded in us.
So you were fully satisfied that he could have been retried, as he was after the mistrial, on those issues, and leaving the aggravated murder out?
Except for the weapon under disability.
Okay, well.
But you're correct. The aggravated robbery, the kidnapping, must stand regardless of what occurs here or on any remand.
Could there be, getting back to the confusion of the jury of the innocence of jury being, the jury had these in front of it. There's prior calculation and design. When you don't reach that, you can go to purposeful. Here is committing murder with the intent to do an aggravated robbery. Okay? The jury comes back and finds it's hung on the robbery, it's hung on the kidnapping, it's hung on intent to kill or committing a robbery, which internally is consistent. You can see that. Those three are consistent. They hang whether you're striving to commit a robbery, whether it's that.
Yes, exactly.
Could you do one reading of the jury that they look at this and they say, well, we don't find that he had prior calculation and design. He didn't plan ahead of time to kill the trigger, but we're hung on the issue of whether he was trying to commit a robbery while doing so. And because we don't find this bit, we're tossing it out, we're acquitting him, but we're all struggling at this point. Isn't that the point of the prosecution? That's why collateral estoppel doesn't apply, because they could very easily be deciding some other issue, and this doesn't apply in their minds anymore.
Well, on that point, this is where...
And that's different from Liberatore. In Liberatore, you would have... This case would be like Liberatore if they acquitted him on robbery, right? And they didn't acquit him on robbery in this case. The predicate for the felony murder is still out there hanging, just like the felony murder is hanging.
Well, every case is going to differ from another case on some fact. The principle is the same. Liberatore, in order to prove the aggravated murder, the prosecution was required to prove, number one, the intentional killing, and number two, the aggravated arson predicate felon. In Mr. Lovejoy's case, in order to prove him guilty of aggravated murder under the felony murder part, they had to prove element A, the intentional killing of another human being, and element B, the predicate felon.
But they could have decided the other case, not necessarily on intentional killing, but on prior calculation and design, and that could have been what they focused on. But we don't know that, do we?
Yes, we do.
How do we know that?
Well, looking solely at the prior is what represents the jury's unequivocal determination that the prosecution failed to prove all the elements.
But that's thinking like a lawyer. A lawyer says you don't do A, B, C, out of here. A jury would say, we don't find calculation design, so all the stuff related to it, we don't have to think about anymore. And we're not going to go over and talk about whether he did this during the commission of a robbery. They could easily reach that conclusion and not make a conscious finding on the intent issues, simply said this is all together. We don't find prior calculation and design, so this part is out, and we're only going to look at this part.
I don't believe that a single appellate court has looked at the issue that way. It is presumed that, provided that the jury instructions are clear, that the jury followed the court's instructions in reaching a unanimous verdict. And the Court of Appeals in Lovejoy's case expended considerable effort in looking to the Ash v. Swenson case, which instructs the court to look at the indictment, the jury instructions, the arguments, etc. They reprinted the instructions dealing with the prior calculation and design count and all the lessors, and concluded that the instructions are very clear that the jury could not acquit the lesser offenses of murder and involuntary manslaughter unless they found against the state on each and every element.
If you're following your line of thought, intentional was decided, then why did they drop felony murder? Because intent was in felony murder. Why did they drop felony murder? If you're saying the jury carefully followed these instructions and is doing the right thing, they should have thrown out felony murder. It's just left the robbery and kidnapping out there.
Well, I believe that majority view, if not the universal view of the federal and state courts that address this issue, is as follows, that because the jury hung on that particular count, the reviewing court cannot read anything into the jury's thought processes or findings in respect to that count, because by virtue of the fact that they hung on that count, they made no specific findings. Now, the prosecutor in her brief has conjured up a number of theories as to why the jury may have acted the way it did. I could speculate as to why the jury failed to acquit on the second count, the felony murder count, but that's precisely what that would be, speculation. That's why in these situations the court must focus on that aspect of the first trial that resulted in an unequivocal, unanimous verdict. The jury did find Mr. Lovejoy not guilty not only of prior calculation and design murder, but also of the lesser included offense of murder and the lesser included offense of involuntary manslaughter. And I believe that their verdict is entitled to credence. They could not have acquitted on those lesser offenses unless they either resolved identity against the prosecutor or the intent to kill against the prosecutor. And as the Court of Appeals in this case noted, quoting from Federal Judge Canary's decision in the Hanks case, that as long as it appears that at least one, if not both, of those issues were decided against the government cannot turn around and re-prosecute the defendant on a crime that would require them and the defendant to relitigate one of those two elements. And
Is that how you would respond to the prosecution's statement that the doctrine of collateral estoppel should not be applied in simultaneous prosecutions?
I would, Your Honor. And the thing is, in 1983, when this court decided Liberty War, it was the virtually unanimous view at that time that collateral estoppel does apply in the multiple counts now 14 years have passed since Liberatore, and again, the Supreme Court has never held otherwise, and in our brief, we cited numerous cases since 1983 where the courts, federal and state, have continued to apply collateral estoppel in these situations, and under the doctrine of stare decisis, for this court to overrule Liberatore and say that it should not apply in that situation. And I think the court needs to see some general trend or something that's positive from the U.S. Supreme Court that would lead it to believe that Liberatore was wrongly decided to the extent that it used collateral estoppel principles in the situation. And it seems clear from the prosecutor's brief that no such case law is out there.
I have trouble following your argument that you say that there's no problem with the defendant's conviction as to aggravated robbery and kidnapping, but there is with felony murder. I see felony murder so closely connected to those crimes, and the juries would be able to go all the way, so please address that issue.
Well, we wouldn't argue with the court if it wants to grant relief in that regard, but the reason why that argument isn't being made is that we're relying on the acquittal of murder, on the lesser included offense of murder and manslaughter, and we can't say that by virtue of those acquittals that the jury necessarily...
But there really isn't any connection, because felony murder is the killing during the course of a felony, in this case robbery or kidnapping, address that. I don't think that the fact intentional really applies in felony murder. So the fact the jury acquitted as to the prior calculation, design, or intentional killing really does not address the other crimes, in my mind.
Yes, with due respect, Your Honor, your premise, Ohio is incorrect. Ohio is one of a minority of states that in the felony murder context does not allow the jury to infer malice by the commission of another felony. Ohio is, I think, one of 8 or 10 states that still requires the prosecution in the felony murder context to also prove an intent to kill coupled with the predicate felony. So that is why there's nothing that we can look to in the acquittal on the murder and manslaughter that we could say that as far as the aggravated robbery or kidnapping that we obtained a finding in our favor on one or more of the elements necessary to prove those predicate crimes. In sum, Your Honor, we submit that the court did reach the right decision, and this analogy to the exclusionary rule is entirely inappropriate. The exclusionary rule in search and seizure cases is what's been described as a prophylactic rule. It's not in the Constitution. It's just a means that the courts have devised of enforcing violations. Double jeopardy and its protections are self-enforcing. They're written into the Constitution, and applying that to Mr. Lovejoy's case, the re-prosecution on the aggravated murder count was improper once the jury found that the essential elements of that count were decided adversely to the prosecution.
Thank you, Mr. Belli. Ms. Anderson, you've saved a little over a half a minute of your time. 39 seconds is the exact.
Of course, in Ohio, our juries in Ohio are told that separate counts are separate. What Mr. Belli is suggesting is that the doctrine of collateral estoppel somehow trumps the doctrine of separate counts are separate. And the finding on this count somehow crosses the line, thereby trumping the doctrine that separate counts are separate. The state's position allows the court to give effect to all of the doctrines having to do with collateral estoppel and double jeopardy. That if the lesser included offense is irrelevant, even Mr. Belli's own cases say this is not a double jeopardy issue. Whether greater and lesser included offenses apply in the double jeopardy context, this is not double jeopardy because it's not, as Mr. that I call it, a re-prosecution. It's a continuing prosecution. So the fact that it was a lesser included offense is completely irrelevant to the double jeopardy, to the collateral estoppel context. And there are no further questions. We would ask that the court overrule liberatory, or at the very least limit it to deliberately sequential prosecutions.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. The case is submitted. You will be advised of our opinion.